Again, good morning. It is wonderful once again to be back. If you have your Old Testament with you and you want to open up back to Genesis, that's where we're going to spend our time together this morning. Particularly chapter 37 is where we're really going to begin if you want to open up there. I don't know if you've looked at the title of the lesson this morning, but we're going to be talking about Judah. An average Joe, an ordinary Joe. I don't know if you've ever looked up that term, if you've ever used that term. An average Joe. There are actually stores and restaurants named after that. There is a website based on this very idea of what an ordinary or an average Joe is. They've taken a lot of different governmental studies that were done and compiled all of these things to show us just what an average Joe is, just what an ordinary Joe or any synonymous term like that really is. The average money that's made, the average education, the average home, what does it look like? The average. One of those things that just doesn't stick out to everything around them. The average Joe, ordinary Joe. And I'm sorry about my voice. I've kept thinking, what is wrong with my voice today? I think I yelled too much at the ball game late last night. So my vocal cords aren't working properly this morning. So we're going to get through this. Judah. Judah is mentioned in the Bible just over 800 times. I don't know if that surprises you, but when I started looking at it, I thought, 800 times. Now, not every time is it specifically mentioning the man named Judah. There are other people named Judah, but more times than not, it's talking about that section of God's people, of Israel, when the United Kingdom was divided after Solomon died and his son and another king, when they divided, Rehoboam and Jeroboam divided the kingdom. We're talking about Judah and Israel. Most of the time Judah is mentioned, it's talking about that. But just over 800 times. Now you think about Judah in his life, where he was, who he was, and all about him. You know, you don't really think about him all that much. What did he do special? What was he? Why? You know, we think about people like Abraham. We think about people like Noah. We think about people like that. But we don't really focus on someone like Judah. And as we've been talking about heroes of faith in the last few weeks, I believe Judah is one of those people because more often than not, I kind of associate more with him or someone like this than I do an Abraham or a Noah or a Moses or one of those people. I haven't built any arcs in my life. I haven't seen a burning bush where God spoke to me from that burning bush. I haven't witnessed those kinds of things, and most of us haven't. I'd probably be safe saying none of us have. But Judah is that normal person. You look at him, he wasn't the first or the second or the third born, he was the fourth born. And if you look at his mother, Leah, he was actually the fourth born of her seven children, so he was what? Exactly in the middle. He was the average child. There was no great expectations by him. Not only that, his mom wasn't even loved by his father. He had everything going against him. He had plenty of reasons to just kick back, keep his mouth shut, and let the world and life pass by him being unnoticed. Judah. Well, if we were to rewind back to Genesis chapter 30, you don't need to turn there, but the story kind of begins, and Jacob, whose name would be Israel later, he's the father of the 12 tribes. We know that. We've studied that. And so he has 13 children, 12 sons and a daughter, and all of those are named, and the wives that he has, and all that history, and we go through that, and God is going to make a country out of them. He's going to make a nation of these 12, and he's going to make the 12 tribes become the nation of Israel. And we're introduced with all of these. We're introduced to his father, who is Abraham's son, Isaac's son, Jacob, who becomes Israel. And we see God passing down all the things that He's doing, and He's working out that promise that He made to Abraham. You know, He told them, I'm going to give you all this land. To your descendants, they're going to have all of this land. And so He tells them that, but He says they're going to be in a land not their own for 430 years. And after that, I'm going to bring them out with great possessions, and they're going to be a nation to Me. They're going to be My people. God's working it out. And we see this. We see this story unfolding. And then we get up here and the sons are all born. Here they are. And now I just want to share a few thoughts with you out of Judah's life. Now chapter 37, we get to it. And Joseph is born. Joseph is the first child of Rachel. He is the one that Jacob loves. Now, I don't know about your family, how you are, where you are in the birth order, and all of those kinds of things. But oftentimes, when siblings get together, they'll point to one of the siblings and say, what? He or she is the favorite. And you say, no, Mom and Dad say, no, they're not. Yeah, they are. They have a coat of many colors. You didn't make that for any of the rest of us. You didn't do this and you didn't do that, and you loved them more than you loved Me because you gave them everything. No, I didn't. And sometimes we do things without even thinking about it, but we talk about those things. Well, Joseph was absolutely the favorite child. There's no doubting that. The brothers all knew it. He knew it himself. His father even will admit that he was the favorite. So, here we are, we're introduced, we have all of these children, we know their names, we know that Joseph is the one that's loved, and all of a sudden Joseph, who's never been told no about anything, what does he do? He meets with his brothers and he says, guess what, guys? I had a dream. They're like, really? You had a dream? What was that dream about? Well, and we'll fast forward to it, but the last part of the second dream, he says, well, the sun and the moon and all these stars were bowing down before Me. All 11 of them. Do what? Now you're going to tell us that our father and our mother and all of us are going to be bowing down before You? I don't know about you, but when your sibling is loved more than you, them telling you something like that is not going to make it any better, is it? So, Joseph is not a very well-liked human being. His brothers do not care a whole lot for him. In 37, in verse 19, the brothers are off taking care of the flock. Joseph goes to them because his father tells him to go check on things. And he was, I'm sure, very happy to do that. He gets to go and see what they're doing and report back to Dad. Well, guess what they're doing? You know, this and this isn't right. You can just almost see him coming back. But they see him coming. In verse 9 it says, here comes the dreamer. Here comes the one who told us that we would all be bowing down before him. You know, the one that none of us like, right? And they're all talking, yeah, yeah, here he comes. Now what are we going to do? Well, what do you do? You know, there was a lot of fighting going on in my house growing up. With six siblings, five boys, there was a lot of roughhousing. There were holes in the walls. There was blood on the floor. I had some rough brothers. I was very genteel my whole life. But there was a lot of damage in that house at times. But I never got to the point that these brothers got to with theirs. When they looked at him, they said, you know what? Let's just kill him and be done with him. Kill him and throw him in a pit, and we'll just go home and tell Dad, you know what? Some big monster ate him. Don't know what happened. Don't even know what it was. We just found a coat, and we figured it was his coat. You know, and that's really what they do later. They say, you tell us, is this his coat? Well, they knew it was. They took it off of him. But they say, let's kill him. And Reuben says, the oldest, said, no, we can't do that. Let's just throw him in the pit. And so it says, after that, they throw him in the pit. They're looking at him. They're discussing things with each other. They're talking, what do we do? And in verse 25, it says, they sat down to eat a meal. And as they raised their eyes, they looked up and saw, and behold, a caravan was coming. So they're sitting there talking while they're eating a meal. We do that, right? We sit around with our siblings even now. And later on, we've got our own children. And we'll sit around and we'll reminisce. And we'll tell stories. And that's what they're doing. And they're talking back and forth. And they're still trying to figure out, what are we going to do with him? What are we going to do with the one that's in the pit? What do we do with him? Well, I'm sure some of them are still saying, let's kill him. Judah says, I think it's interesting how he phrases the things that he says. Verse 26. Judah says to his brothers, what profit will it be for us to kill our brother and to cover up his blood? Now,
you got to think. Put yourself in Judah's mindset for a second. Why would you ask a question like that? How many people are going to throw something at you? You've got all this stuff gathered up in the garage, and you go, I'm just going to find a dumpster big enough to dump this. And someone says, wait a minute. Do you know how much that's worth? Have you seen, you know, this is an antique. What are we doing? Man, you're throwing away a lot of money. How many of you just take wads of money and throw it in the trash can? We don't do that, do we? Now, that may have what ends up happening, but that's not what we would intend to do. So Judah is saying, now wait a minute, how are we going to profit from that? We're not going to make anything, so let's figure out a way to make some money. And they look up, they see this caravan, his mind's already spinning. You can see it in him. He's doing, you know what, let's just sell him and we'll make some money.
Let's do that. Now, is that the best scenario that he could come up with? Maybe not. But he doesn't want to kill his brother. He says in verse 27, so let's come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh.
We can't do this. He's actually our own brother, our own kin, our own blood. We can't do this. So let's just sell him. I don't know how much better that is, but it's a better option than killing him.
So Judah does this. Now look at what they said at the very last of verse 27. And his brothers listened to him. Now,
I can picture Judah sitting in the middle of the crowd as they're watching this brother that none of them like, and they're trying to figure out what to do, and Judah is, I don't know that we should kill him. They probably all have a little voice in the back of their head. We shouldn't do this. We shouldn't kill him. But they're all, that mob mentality is going on. But Judah stops them and says, no, wait a minute. We can't do this. It's wrong. We can't shed our own blood of our own relatives. We can't do that. That is wrong. So let's sell them. So he's at least thinking, what is it that we need to do? We've been raised our whole lives, hopefully, being taught there are some things that are right and there are some things that are wrong. And we know those things that are right and wrong, and we don't do those things. As a child, we teach our children not to steal things. You go into a grocery store, you're not supposed to go over to that candy aisle and take that piece of candy out and eat it. Why? It doesn't belong to you. And so as parents, we teach them their lives, don't do those things. That's not okay. And we teach them all these life lessons, and hopefully that those things will take seed in their mind and will grow to the point where they go, it's not right. And so Judah has had some things taught in his life, and he's allowing those things to grow, and it's changed who he is. He may not be the firstborn who everyone would look to, like Reuben, or even the next ones. Just average in the middle of the group. But it says his brothers, because he was thoughtful in the things that he was saying, they're listening to him. Now, in chapter 38... this is a strange chapter because the reality is the majority of Genesis from chapter 30 on is about Joseph. Okay? It's about his life, about what he is, who he is, where he goes, what he's going to accomplish,
how things are going to work out in Egypt and all of those things. But there's a little timeout, a little snippet, a little picture that we are not going to understand history if we don't have this little chapter. Now this chapter is about Judah and Tamar. And Judah has his sons. He has three sons. And Onan and Shelah. And he has these three sons. And then he gets a daughter, Tamar, for his oldest son. Well, his oldest son is not a good man. He's not a moral man. And God takes his life. Well, in their history, what happens is the next son in line is to marry that wife and have children with her for the older son. So he goes and he says, "All right, Onan, you've got to marry her and you've got to raise children." He says, "I don't want to do that. Because if we have kids, they're not my kids, they're his. I don't want to bring about kids for my brother. I want my own family." And it says, so he sinned against God, and God took his life. And so Judah is looking, and he says, "I only have one son left, and he's too young." So he says, "Tamar, you go back home, you go to your place, and when my son's old enough, I will send for you, and he can marry you, and then raise children with you." Now, you fast forward through time, years go by, the child gets older and older and older, he's grown up, and Tamar is going, "Well, I'm still all alone, I still don't have a husband." And she hears that Judah is close at hand. So she puts a veil on and goes over and pretends to be a prostitute, and he goes in and he sleeps with her. And he says, "Guess what, I'm going to give you, or what is your price?" And she says, "Then." And so they agree on a price. And he starts to leave, and she goes, "Now, how do I know you're going to send payment? Well, how about I give you my ring and my staff and these reeds or tassels? I'll give these things to you to hold until I send your payment." She says, "Okay." And so they go back to take payment. She's gone. No one knows anything about her because she's not a prostitute. She's not one there doing those things. And Judah says, "Well, we tried, so we're guiltless now." And then a little bit later, you know the story, if you know it, then someone finds out Tamar's pregnant, and they go and tell Judah, and what does Judah do? Kill her. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what the law says is to happen. We are supposed to kill someone if they act like this. And so they go and they say, "All right, this is it. We're going to have to take her life." But look at verse 26 with me of chapter 38. He goes and meets with Tamar. Tamar says, before any of this happens, though, let me give you some things. Here are a few little articles that I want to hand you, and you tell me, who do these belong to? And he looks and he sees his ring and his staff. He sees his possessions, and then he says, look at verse 27. I'm sorry, verse 26. Judah recognized him and he said, "She is more righteous than I am." And Judah is looking at what he has done in his life and realized, "I'm not who I'm supposed to be. I'm not who I'm supposed to be. I didn't do the things that God told me to do. I've not lived the life I'm supposed to live. I've treated her poorly. I didn't do the things God told me to do. I didn't raise my children the way God told me to raise my children. And I didn't treat my daughter-in-law the way I was supposed to treat her. I sinned against God. How can I punish her when I'm more sinful than she is? She is more righteous than I am." Punishment doesn't belong to her. It really belongs to Judah. And Judah backs away from that. And he says, "I can't do this." Why?
Once again, all those teachings he's had in his life, and this relationship he's had with God, has affected him. And sometimes we overlook it. Sometimes we want to pass judgment on someone. Sometimes in our life we look at other people and go, "Boy, I tell you what, they're not living such a good life. I need to go and talk to them. I need to tell them, you need to shape up, because God's not going to be happy with you." And sometimes we even think, "You know what, I need to go tell them people, if you don't change, you're not going to make it to heaven. You have no hope for that." And boy, then we get this righteous attitude about that. And is there anything wrong with helping people and encouraging people to live the life? No, there's not. That's not what Judah did. He looked at his life and he said,
I'm the one who's not living my life right. I'm not the one who's doing things the way God told me to do, to live the life God has told me to live. And so he looks at Tamar and he says, I'm unrighteous. Now I say that because
his heart was changed. What can God do with a heart that's open? Tamar has a child that we won't understand until we look at history later. This is the child that the lineage of Christ is going to come through. And if we don't have this story, then we don't have the ability to trace Christ's lineage all the way back to Abraham. Or we just don't have it. We would never understand who was Perez. Where did he come from? But God can change hearts. God can bring about things no matter what's going on in our life. And the decisions that we make, even though they're poor, maybe we're not making the perfect decisions, God can use those situations we're in, if our heart is right, to guide us and take us where we need to go. He can make good things come out of bad situations.
God can use ordinary people to bring about powerful results, if we'll allow Him. Now you fast forward a little bit more. I'm going to have to hurry through this. In chapter 42, Judah goes to Egypt. Now,
if you know the story, Joseph has been sold into slavery. He's in Egypt. He goes through all of these things, and Pharaoh makes him second in command of the entire country because he tells him some dreams. There's going to be famine in the land. There's going to be 7 really good years of harvest and 7 years of famine. And we need to pack all this food away. God's getting them ready to bring His people into Egypt to serve that 400 years that He told them about. And He's working all those things out.
And Joseph is there. Joseph is now in command. And his brothers are starving. And so they have to go in and get food. And they go in and they go before Joseph. And they don't know it's his brother. Or it's their brother.
Joseph knows who they are, but they don't know who Joseph is. They're not expecting their brother, who they beat up, sold into slavery,
and that he's the number 2 man in the world in power. So they bow down before him. And Joseph remembers his dreams. And he says, y'all are spies. You're coming in here to spy out our land so that you can come in and conquer us. And they said, No. We just came for food. Here's our money. Here's all this stuff. And he says, no, I don't believe it. And so they tell him the story about their father and about the son Benjamin, about all these other things that Joseph doesn't know about right now. And he learns about where Jacob is, what's going on in his life. And he says, here's what you need to do. You need to bring back your little brother. You want to come back. I'm going to keep one of you here. I'm going to keep one of you. The rest of you go home and you get your little brother and you bring him back. And that's how I'll know that you're not spies. That's how I'll know that you're not trying to come in and take over for this land. Now, we fast forward again. They're back in their land. Their brother is back with Joseph, being held hostage. They tell their father. He says, there's no way. I can't send my only son. You've already destroyed my life. You've taken 2 of my children away from me, and now you're wanting to take my other one. No, it's not going to happen. And so they get down where they need the food. They send them back again. Benjamin is with them, and Benjamin is caught stealing a cup that Joseph has put in his stuff. Bring him back. They empty all the stuff out. Benjamin has the cup, and he says, you're going to be my servant, my slave. But the story is this. Look at Judah's life. In chapter 44, in verse 16, Judah is talking to Joseph, to the one second in command. He says, what can we say, my Lord? What can we speak? And how can we justify ourselves? God has found out the iniquity of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's slaves, both we and the one whose possession the cup has been found. Hear what he says? We're guilty. We can't say anything. Well, there's nothing that we can do. We are going to be your slaves. And Joseph says, no. That's not how it's going to happen. Only the one who stole the cup, he's the one who's going to be a slave. When you look at the end of this story, in verse 32, Judah is the one speaking for his brothers. Look at the things that he has said. Look, and we'll close pretty quickly. In verse 32, he says, "For your servant became surety for the lad to my father, saying, 'If I do not bring him back to you, then let me bear the blame before my father forever. Now therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the lad, a slave to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brothers. For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me, for fear that I will see the evil that would overtake my father?'" Now do you think that Judah is thinking anything about what's gone on in his past life when he sold his brother, who he's talking to and doesn't understand it, when he says, "I can't return home without Benjamin. I can't do that because I can't fathom, I cannot understand how much pain I'm going to inflict on my father because I've already seen it once and I don't want to do it again. I don't want to live through that." Do you think he's lived through all of the regret, the remorse, and everything that he's done in his life because of what he did by selling his brother? Even if he wanted to give every possession he had, he wouldn't even have a clue where to go find his brother to buy him back to take him to his father. So he's having to live every single day a lie, talking to his father, knowing that he's lying to him about everything. He's having to live through that year after year after year. And he said, "I don't want to do that again. I can't do that again." He started out in this conversation saying, "We are guilty. We are sinful. We can't say anything before you. We should be your servants." To now he's saying, "Let them all go and just let me stay. I can't bear this anymore." And I read that and I think of Paul when he's writing to the church at Corinth in 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 10. And he says, "For the sorrow that is according to the will of God," sorrow that is according to the will of God, "produces a repentance that leads to salvation. But the sorrow of the world produces death." When we have a godly sorrow, that leads to repentance. That leads to salvation with God. But when we have a worldly, when we're like, "Man, I'm sorry I got caught," then that leads us to telling lies all the time and to try to cover up. And Paul says, "No, we can't do that." That's where Judah is, his heart. What can God do with an average Joe that gives his heart to Him? It was read, Kenny read it for us just a little while ago. In Genesis chapter 49, 8 through 12, at the end of their lives, at the end of Israel's life, or Jacob's life, he's blessing his kids, and he comes to that point in 49, 8 through 12, and he talks about the blessing that he gives to Judah. Judah, verse 8, "Your brothers will praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp. For the prey, my son, you have gone up. He couches down. He lies down like a lion. And as a lion, who dares rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet."
You hear what he says?
Here's the chosen one. Through Judah, everything good is going to happen. Everything. The scepter will never leave him and his offspring, his family. This is the line the Messiah is going to come through. What can God do to an average or through an average Joe, an ordinary person, but has a right heart? God can do anything if we'll let Him.
You think about today and us. And I've got stories of different people that I know.
What can God do with average Joes? If you were to look around right now in this auditorium, you're going to see a room full of average Joes. Does that make us bad, poor? No. It just means this is the norm. When we look at education and we look at incomes and we look at the houses we live in and we look at all those things, we're average people, the majority of us here.
And a lot of times we'll let that go. What can I do? No one wants to listen to an average person, right? They want to listen to someone who's exceptional. They want to hear what... And that's not it at all. Two men that I think of in my life. One, his name was Leonard. I grew up in worship with this man. An older man when I was a young boy. And I don't remember him ever leading a song. I don't remember him ever reading Scripture in public. I don't ever remember watching him or hearing him teach a Bible class, give a lesson, or anything in public. He was scared absolutely to death to get up in front of anyone. But he had a study almost every single night in his house around his dining room table. And I don't know how many dozens and dozens and dozens of people he converted around that dining room table. Because God can work through right hearts. Change the world. I don't know how many people in that church were in that church because of one man who no one would have ever dreamed he would teach God's Word as powerfully as he could. There's another man that I got to see 5 days a week. He'd come into the office and he would make copies because he believed in World Bible School. He was in, used a walker at best about this speed, and most of the time he was in a wheelchair. But he studied with more than 7,000 different people all over the world. Average, I can take you to their houses right now and show you their houses. Little frame house, nothing extravagant, just average, ordinary people that God used in extraordinary ways. The good news is, power doesn't come from us. It comes from God Himself. The power to change lives is not in me, but it's in the message that we have been given. God can change lives. He can change my life. He can change your life. God can use us in any way that He sees fit. He can use an ordinary person to bring about extraordinary things if we'll allow Him to do it. If we'll allow God to work in our life. The message doesn't originate with us, it's His. The message is one of love and of redemption. The message is of one of our Christ, of a Messiah who gave His life for this world. This morning, I want to end with this, a challenge to you. I think it's time that we quit wondering what God can do through us and start believing what God is going to do. Through us. Don't think God can't do extraordinary things through you, because He can. But what we have to do is, we've got to allow Him to do it. We've got to take our own personalities and all of those issues that we have out of it and forget about who we are and where we are in this life and go, it doesn't really matter. God is in control. God is the one who's going to bless me. So this morning, as you stop and as you think about your life and where you are and who you are and what you've done, what you've accomplished to this point in your life, it doesn't matter how wealthy you are. It doesn't matter how big your house is. It doesn't matter how many vehicles you have. None of those things matter. It doesn't matter if you've got an Ivy League education. Those things do not matter. They don't. People argue over that. Well, education is important. Okay. But the most highly educated people in the world can't do anything if their heart's not right, God's not with them. God can use the most uneducated person in the world to change this world if their heart is right. Ask yourself this morning. What is God going to do for you? What are you going to allow Him to accomplish through your life? Don't think you can. Start dreaming. What is God going to do? Don't lose sight. It's God doing it. It's not you. God will do great things through you if you let Him. That's why He calls to us constantly from His Word. Wanting us to be faithful. Wanting us to listen. Wanting us to follow Him and believe what He can. God can use an ordinary man like Judah, or He can use an ordinary man or woman like me and like you to do extraordinary things if we give ourselves to Him. Are you ready to give your life to Him?
Are you ready to give control to Him? You can begin that walk. You can begin that relationship this morning by being immersed into Christ. Or if you're already in that relationship, you can. It's time to get out of the way and let God control your life. If you know that, maybe it's time that you come forward and you say, I need to pray. I need you to pray with me. I need this family to pray for me so that I will be empowered to let God rule in my life. If you're at that point in your life, what better time than right now? Because if God gives us the power, not us, God will give you the power to be successful in this life if you're ready. So the question is, are you going to want to?